TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I don't want to frighten you, but there are two zombies watching you from behind your bookshelf.
What? Again? I thought we got rid of them. Chris, why are we still here?
You can never get rid of the zombies, Matthew. They're always coming after you.
You can, if you do a double tap. So anybody who's seen Zombieland, you know how to get rid of zombies, and it's double tap.
All right. Well, someone should have told Archer because, I mean, they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
It sounds like an old song from the 70s, you know, tap two times on the bulkhead if they're zombies.
Oh, man.
All right. Yes, everyone, we're going to be continuing our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise today with the fifth episode of season three. It's Impulse. And that's not a cologne on Vulcan.
But I hear that cologne, Chris, is highly logical.
Indeed it is. I've seen the ads. All right, everyone. Here is a quick rundown of the story. A distress call leads the Enterprise to a derelict Vulcan cruiser trapped in an asteroid field. When the crew boards the ship to mount a rescue, they find not the calm and cold Vulcans they're used to, but rather scary and cold zombies. As they attempt to get off the ship, whatever has transformed the Vulcan crew begins to affect T'Pol. And as her behavior becomes more and more irrational, a new threat to survival comes from within the landing party itself. So, Matthew, you'll notice that synopsis was maybe a little bit shorter than usual because the content of the story is maybe a little bit thin, but I do think it's a good story for the character development of T'Pol and others on the crew, and T'Pol's probably the best place to jump into this with the effects that the Trillium D has on her and how that kind of leads us through this story and also sets up some interesting things to come for the series.
Yeah, I mean, this storyline for T'Pol is the thing that is going to, I mean, there's an indelible line in Enterprise before this and after this for this character, because she's never the same. And and so, yes, this in that sense, this episode is incredibly important because what happens to T'Pol in this experience changes her forever, but it also then changes all of the relationships she has around her. You know, it's something that affects her relationship with Archer and with Trip and with everybody else on this ship. And so that is really, really fascinating. And what's also interesting, too, is just when you think about the idea of utilizing the difference in race, right, between like Vulcans and humans. So humans don't have any interaction with Trillium D, but Vulcans do. So something about their physiology creates this really harsh reaction. It's almost like the way in which, you know, some people can have an incredible reaction to, say, a vaccine or something that other people don't have. And so I find that to be really fascinating because what you're really doing is you're taking into account is that, yeah, Vulcans are like us in many ways, but they're also completely different than us in other ways. And so utilizing that as a storytelling idea, especially here for T'Pol, is actually really, I mean, it's a good idea, you know, and I think it's one, of course, that we then will explore throughout the end of Enterprise.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in this case because, of course, we've seen throughout Star Trek situations where a disease or something in the environment or various factors that are thrown into stories affect one species but not another. But usually it's a one-off thing just to drive the plot of a particular episode. And in this case, with T'Pol being a Vulcan on a ship of mostly humans, it's interesting to flip this around where she's the one that's impacted and the humans aren't, because going back to the original series with Spock, it's so often been the case that Vulcans are somehow not affected by something that's affecting humans, and therefore Spock is able to save everybody. Or we've seen it on The Next Generation with Data. It's a little bit of a strange comparison because Data is a machine, but you have a character who's not affected and therefore can save everyone. And usually the humans are the ones that are easily impacted by things, because it helps to show us how dangerous it would be to actually be out in space. But so here, to have it where the humans have to save the Vulcans and Archer has to save T'Pol, I thought really flipped that kind of basic conceit of Star Trek on its head a bit.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, like you said, it's not something that we see very often. Vulcans, you know, and their immune system and the way their structured physiology, it makes them immune to almost everything, it seems like. And mm-hmm. So, like you said, to have this place here where, you know, we've seen the ways in which the Expanse affect everyone, but to have the Vulcans be even more susceptible to the Expanse and the very thing that would keep one safe in the Expanse, you know, ship-wise, mm-hmm. is pretty fascinating. And I mean, when you think about it, the effects here for T'Pol, because of what this does to her, it also impacts everybody else around her, not just relationally, which of course it does because of the way that she will never be the same with her emotional control. But this also impacts just the fact that by her very existence now in Enterprise, she is actually putting the Enterprise at serious risk, honestly, mm-hmm. by Archer deciding to keep her on the ship. And so, of course, you know, that's an incredibly human then thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's this clash between humanity and logic for even Archer and the impact of T'Pol. And so I just find this to be that. I mean, these are all the things that really make this episode interesting, because for all the craziness that's happening, mm-hmm. really the most important things are these character moments that are mm-hmm. are going to then continue forward, especially for the character of T'Pol and for the character of Archer. Everything mm-hmm. else that really kind of happens in this episode has, you know, some minor connection to the rest of the season, especially in the fact that, you know, they're not going to be able to use Trillium D, so they can always use an anomaly whenever they need to throw something, a wrench in, because the ship is not going to be protected from anomalies, those kind of things. But really, it's that whole idea that, like the event that season 3 is based off of with 9/11, the mm-hmm. the quest is going to be a thing to which is going to do this utter change to many of the characters, and some for the better and some for the worse, and some who mm-hmm. are going to have to overcome the worst that happens to them as they you know, end up on this mission. I mean, and this is one of those things where T'Pol doesn't ask for this. She doesn't choose this. It's literally something that just happens to her because of her physiology. And mm-hmm. she has no control over whether or not she has this reaction to the Trillium D and what it does to her, which mm-hmm. that in and of itself, too, is incredibly interesting for the mm-hmm. character. And so all of that, yeah, I mean, this is where the episode here really just kind of plants its flag, especially mm-hmm. in these two characters, and says, yeah, we're going to do some stuff with Archer, and we're going to do some stuff with T'Pol, and we're really going to kind of shake up what it means to tell, I think, a Star Trek story, because we're going to put these characters through the ringer in a way that you've not really seen in Star Trek much, except for maybe Deep Space Nine, when you think of Sisko and his experience in the Dominion War. In fact, that entire crew's experience in the Dominion War.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, the 9/11 backdrop and connection is an interesting one because so many of the first responders were impacted long term by exposure to chemicals.
Yes.
I mean, of course, there's the trauma of the actual situation, but there's also the exposure to chemicals that impacted their health long term. And that is, whether it was done intentionally or it's just what happens in a parallel situation in how the story is set up, it does mirror that aspect of the real world event that inspired the basic story of season three. So that's there. And also what I like about this is that they want to do something different with the character of T'Pol. But rather than, and also you can't drag it out. I mean, at this point, they probably assumed that they were going to have 7 seasons of this show. Well, yeah, I don't know exactly because, you know, the ratings were kind of bumpy and then the show was canceled basically. And then it was brought back and then it was canceled again. But anyway, they're probably thinking they have more time than they ended up having to develop the character of T'Pol. But they want to accelerate that. So how do you accelerate that in a way that feels natural to the viewer? And of course, you could expose them to something. You could do something in a story that causes them to suddenly change and start to drastically change as a character. But by making it Trillium D and giving it that connection to the mission and having the thing that causes her to change be the thing that the crew needs to survive and actually complete their mission, I think is one of the strongest elements of this, not only this episode, but this whole plot line, so that it feels natural.
Yeah.
It feels like they're on a real mission and this is a real consequence of what's happening to them.
Yeah. One of the things that you had kind of put on our outline is the way that we get caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you, baby. That's
Elvis,
right. We got some suspicious minds going on. And one of the things that I loved about this and you wrote down and it was like, oh, yes, this is so good. We get that opportunity to explore that suspicious nature that the humans had for the Vulcans, and especially in their relationship where, you know, Archer felt held back and all of those kind of things. And now we're kind of getting that flipped on its head as these Vulcans lose their minds, losing their ever-loving minds, you know, and they become irrational and suspicious. And what's interesting, too, is that you hear T'Pol actually bring up some of those grievances that humans have had, specifically somebody like Archer, right, against Vulcans, and then kind of thrown back in their face, but in a way that lacks that kind of true logical thought progression, you know, it's interesting because then what we get here is we do get to see what this allows us to see is Vulcans as they were before they embraced logic, where their worst impulses could be released at any moment. And so that's what I find, you know, most fascinating about this whole suspicion part is that to realize, you know, and of course we kind of get this in the sense that then the Romulans, when they branch off, they hone this suspicious nature and turn it into a whole society. That's fascinating. And so to me.
Yeah, right.
Again.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Those are the type of things when I think about the way in which this story is kind of utilizing a lot of that stuff that's in the background. And again, to me, that's the stuff that the episode does really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think from just the Enterprise storytelling point of view, it's interesting to see that flipped around where she's telling Archer that he wants to kill all the Vulcans to get revenge for the Vulcans holding back his father's work, which you know is not something that she actually thinks. And it's not something like the suspicion that humans had about Vulcans and their intentions made sense from what was actually happening in their real lives in this timeline in Star Trek. But flipping that around doesn't make sense for the Vulcans to be suspicious of the humans, but it shows the irrational nature of how this, of what's playing out as T'Pol loses her mind and the other Vulcans obviously already had. So I think it's just kind of fun to see that flipped around purely within the Archer T'Pol relationship.
Yeah, I agree.
To show those suspicions. But the other thing that it does, and there's that moment in there where T'Pol is asked by Emeko, how can this be happening when Vulcans aren't supposed to have emotions? And she explains that, well, of course, we actually do have emotions. And this episode highlights particularly well that notion that we've come to know in Star Trek that Vulcans have very strong emotions, but they keep them suppressed. And to see what happens when that ability to suppress the emotions is compromised is, it's frightening. So that's the setting that we have here of this kind of horror flick going on, reinforces that very well.
I mean, a second, I thought that they had just run into a Denny's and they were like, $2.99, are you out of your mind for the Grand Slam? but no, that's not what happened. That's not what happened.
Well, hold on, Matthew. Maybe I'm getting my my restaurants mixed up, but wouldn't it be $3.99? Isn't there a 50 cent per egg surcharge going on now with the Grand Slam?
Probably or is that Waffle House? I don't know.
But, I think it's Waffle House, actually.
but no,
they're shocked.
No, I think that's actually a really good point to bring up, because it was something that we were actually talking about on, I don't even know what the other side is, on the other side of...
The catwalk, I think.
Yeah, the catwalk. Yeah. So, yeah. But this episode, aside from its important character moments, which are incredibly important for T'Pol and for Archer specifically, you know, this episode is just basically one long chase sequence in a ship. Yeah. And it's full of, flashing strobe type lighting all the time. And for that, this is, I will say, I love all the character stuff and I think it's great. I really wish that they had found maybe a different way to do some of this, because I don't actually really enjoy watching this episode. And I find the episode itself somewhat boring because I never think that anybody's really in danger.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to kill anybody on this mission. And so just the structure of the episode being placed on this like House of Horror ship of Vulcans. And then, of course, the way it's shot and the choice they make with all the flashing. I mean, honestly, maybe if you just take out the flashing lights, it would help. I'm not super susceptible to that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I find it obnoxious after too long a period. So I don't know. How do you feel about that part of the episode in the sense that the majority of this episode is basically just kind of the same thing over and over and over again?
Yeah.
It's like Star Trek Groundhog Day.
Well, now that would be something if T'Pol keeps waking up and she's okay, and then she's loses her mind, and then at the end she wakes up again and starts it all over.
That would be rough.
Yeah. So, I think on one viewing, on a first viewing, I think it's okay because you're just following through for 42 minutes,
sure.
I guess it is, you know, what's going to happen. It's not an episode that you want to go back and watch over and over because the most important part of the episode is what we've been discussing about the character transformations and the relationships. And really all of that can be condensed down into just a few minutes.
Yeah.
And the rest of the episode, like you said, is like a chase scene. It's one of those moments that happens every once in a while in Star Trek where they decide they want to do like something that's conceptually different. And hey, what if we did a Horror House episode?
Right.
And it's quite similar to an episode you and I know well from Deep Space Nine, which is Impak Nor, which is also go aboard a derelict ship, in that case, a mirror of Deep Space Nine itself. It's dark, it's creepy. One character is affected by something psychologically, the same way that happens here. And so they do these things every once in a while. I would say I think Impak Nor is a more interesting story than this story. But it has similarities. And the flashing light stuff, it doesn't bother me either, but I am aware that it really bothers some people. And so it's a little bit surprising to have something that goes on that long. I think that
I agree.
This is probably an episode that there are people who can't watch it because of how it affects them, because they're sensitive to that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. I think, like I said, I think it's fine the first time you watch it through, but this episode, its value comes in the seeds that it plants for the stories to come, not in the episode itself.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think one of the things that does help the episode is the fact that Jolene Blaylock's performance, as she slowly loses it, is really, really good, especially as she's trying to hold it together. And you can just see it written all over her face is that she can't. And then, as she begins to lash out irrationally and she can't help that either. And you can see the pain that it's causing her to not be in control of herself, which is, there's something so interesting about obviously watching a character experience that. And I think part of that is that, we as human beings like to pretend like we're in control of our lives, and yet we find out many times that we're just really not. There's so much we don't control. And so we experience what she's kind of feeling on a huge level, right? Just an earth-shattering type of level we experience all the time. And so I think that she really does carry the episode. And it's, I think, on top of that, it's further driven then with Scott Bakula's reactions to Blaylock's reactions. And then the way in which this is really putting a strain on him, because, normally he's the one who relies on her for her calm. And now he's basically having to talk down a psychotic Vulcan. And it's like, it's kind of terrifying, right? Because you know that Vulcans are stronger than human beings. But he also knows that, and he's getting a clear picture as to, pre-Serac Vulcans as well. And so I find this to be really interesting. And you do actually think about this as in retrospect now, knowing what's going to come for the Vulcans, in that storyline, it makes this even more interesting. But oh my gosh, I think a lot of times Blaylock does not get the due that she deserves in her performance as this character. And she really nails it.
She does. And it's not just the animated parts where she's lashing out, but the quiet moments too, where she's just portraying through simple facial expressions, like when she's with Phlox, how out of control she is of her own mind at that point, but in a quiet way. And I've always thought that Jolene Blaylock does a wonderful job with the character of T'Pol. and Enterprise. But watching this episode again to prepare for this discussion, I was just really struck by how strong her performance is. And then to think about the fact that she is primarily known as a model. And I went and looked at her filmography just to double check. Her filmography is very thin. And she really has very little formal acting training. And to be able to play this character the way that she does across the series, and particularly in this episode, it's just extremely impressive to me that someone who hasn't spent years honing the craft of acting, but rather got this role, does some acting, but you know, she's mainly known for this role. This is Jolene Blaylock's primary work in her filmography. And
yeah,
but she's so good. Like, she's so much stronger than a lot of actors who have spent their lives honing the craft mm-hmm. of acting. And I just think that's not to say anything about anyone else, but rather just to say how impressive I think Jolene Blaylock is in this episode and is overall as to Paul.
You know, it's one of those things, I think, that makes me very sad that we, you know, honestly didn't get more Enterprise, because she's, mm-hmm. her performance here is great. But I think everyone's performance in this episode is actually very good. I especially think mm-hmm. of Scott. And then the actor who is playing the Mako that's with them does a great job, especially in the discussions that he's having with T'Pol. I found those to be wonderful as well. It's like everybody was really on point for this episode, and I find it a little bit frustrating in some ways that such important work is being done in an episode that I don't particularly love just rewatching a lot, because mm-hmm. the overall episode itself is kind of thin for like story. But it's yeah. rife with just great character stuff. And so that's kind of a frustrating experience. But it's a hallmark that when you watch the episode again, that you're really struck by the ability of these actors to portray these very raw and real emotions, as you mm-hmm. mentioned, from the high to the low of the character. Mm-hmm. It's just great stuff.
The Mako actor is Sean McGowan.
Okay.
And the character's name is F. Hawkins. But the key, I think the point you're making about him and how well he plays the role is he is one of the Mako who appears repeatedly in this Zindi arc. He's actually in 4 episodes. And so he is McGowan's performance is one that you did have them coming back to him as well. Another thing to touch on here with the story and what it does for the overall mission is that it does talk about the need for the crew to balance the challenges and dangers of the mission with caring for themselves, whether it's caring for their mental health, having downtime, coming together as a family. Tripp is trying to get movie night going again. He's telling Archer that, you know, like we can't just be going all the time like this. And Archer tells him that there will be plenty of time for movies after we deal with the Zindi. But after the experience of all of this, we do end up with movie night at the end. And Archer himself, you know, when T'Pol tells him to leave her behind, she's going to be endangering the ship, and he won't do it. He tells her that I can't try to save humanity without holding on to what makes me human. And I think as we watch Archer evolve through this season, we've talked here on the show already in the past some about him evolving from kind of the very naive, wide-eyed captain into someone who's more suspicious, and then how this mission is causing him to do things that he normally wouldn't have done. He's more aggressive with how he deals with aliens and how he tries to procure the information that they need, for example. And this is a moment where I think the experience causes him to put the brakes on that a little bit and remember that while we're on a mission to save Earth, we can't forget why we need to save Earth in the first place. We can't forget who we are as human beings.
Well, I think the interesting part about this is that, you know, he actually just sees in the Vulcans kind of what can happen, right? Mm-hmm. And now that's unintentional for the Vulcans. It's not like they're causing that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, isn't that kind of the same way in which we as humans interact with ourselves and the choices that we make? And it's why the phrase is, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? And mm-hmm. and so we can rationalize, like, human beings are incredibly good at lying to themselves about things. Like, it's one of our greatest superpowers is the ability to lie to ourselves and to rationalize.
Yeah. I remember that character actually from Justice League, Lying Man. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that you put it so well, you know, it's like Archer can sense that and does kind of put the brakes on that. And mm-hmm. I do think that, and this is, I think this is what actually makes this such a interesting episode too, in that area for Trip, where Trip actually shows some real growth here as a character, because he kind of, I mean, this is a moment where he steps up as a leader to challenge his captain and say, hey,
mm-hmm.
you are working everybody to the point of exhaustion, to the point of we're not going to be able to do this mission if you keep running us ragged like this, if we all keep going like this. And Trip is speaking to himself because he's had this issue with sleep and struggling with his sleep because of what happened to his sister, the nightmares that he's experienced, the insomnia mm-hmm. that it's caused. And obviously that's led to all the stuff with T'Pol and the neuro pressure. But with that, I think it's led him to realize, to have this realization for himself and then for the rest of the crew, we have to find a way to be able to kind of decompress some of this, or we're just going to explode, you know, and that explosion is going to look something like what happened to the Vulcans, where it's just, it's going to come out because we can't help it as beings. Like, if we keep that type of stuff bottled up for so long, It's gonna explode on somebody. It's gonna explode somewhere, mm-hmm. and it's gonna be bad for us. And so, I really love that whole idea of the story with T'Pol, the storyline we've had with Trip so far, and now the storyline we've been telling with Archer in the season, where we pull together that thematic element of we believe this mission to be righteous,
mm-hmm.
but we can't lose our righteousness, basically. On this mission. And Archer has already come close
mm-hmm.
to that line, right? And so I think that's what makes this really interesting. And again, no other show really dealt with this in the same way and other than Deep Space Nine. I mean, there are points mm-hmm. in Voyager where we come to these type of discussions in some ways with Janeway, but not in the sustained sense that we get with mm-hmm. characters as
right.
because like Deep Space Nine, Enterprise is become now a very serialized show. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this is that weird juxtaposition of this episode. It's like the format of the episode and just kind of the trappings of the episode aren't necessarily fantastic, but mm-hmm. the rest of the stuff in the episode is really fantastic.
Yeah, right. Well, one other thing that's fantastic in the episode I did want to mention are the visual effects, and specifically the asteroid field and the shuttlecraft moving through it. Considering that this was on television in 2003, I think that all of these scenes are very well done. They're very impressive. At that time, you didn't see this kind of intricate, detailed motion in scenes like this. You saw it in the movies where they had big budgets for it, but that is one part of this episode that really stands out to me, that we came right out of Voyager, right into Enterprise. There aren't that many years between the end of Voyager and where we are now in the third season of Enterprise. But yet I feel like the technical aspects of the show, of what Star Trek can do, advanced a lot in that time.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, when you do look at what they are attempting, I mean, this is huge. I mean, the workload for this episode VFX wise is quite substantial, with the asteroid work that they're doing, with of course the big Vulcan ship in the middle of that, and you know, the shuttle pods flying through it. I mean, all of this is intricate work to pull off on, you know, an episode, and so they're working diligently to make this something that you've never seen before, right? And obviously, it is a process that started in Voyager, where we started using a lot more CGI.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I was watching it, and I didn't pull the disc out, but I was watching it on the streaming. You know, this is a 1080 presentation, and it does still look pretty good. And so, and I would say too, even though I don't quite love all the flashing lights in the corridors, the actual corridor scenes and the lighting besides that is all very effective, very well done, you know? And so, yeah, they're really pulling off, something pretty spectacular, I think, in the visual effects realm in this episode, which it should get praise for.
Yeah, just for a single episode, I think it's impressive. You can see how the ability of the computers to process and render this stuff had advanced quite a bit since Voyager's CGI efforts. You know, that's just the natural thing. And then if you look at shows today, what they can do, you know, it's basically anything, right? But the corridor scenes in here too, the ones in particular with the distorted vision, with the zombies really coming at you, they feel a lot like the Borg scenes in First Contact.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell that they were kind of mimicking and mirroring the things that Frakes and his DP had done in that film, for sure.
Yeah. So one last bit of trivia. The cold open to this episode, did you realize that it is actually the shortest cold open in Star Trek?
Wow. That's crazy.
So I always remember Scorpion as being the episode that has the shortest cold open, where you just see the cube destroyed and they don't even finish their phrase about assimilation. Mm. And I think I remember that one because it was so shocking at the time. We had been accustomed to the Borg as being this invincible force, and then suddenly there's something out there that's like, oh, Borg cube, aren't you cute? Boom. Mm-hmm. And it's over, right? So Scorpion's cold open comes in at just under 20 seconds, and this one is just over 18 seconds. So they're very close, but this one is actually shorter, and it's something that my mind does not go to this episode when I think about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would say for me, it's been so long since I have even seen Scorpion. And so I totally forgot that, but it did register for me that this is very short. It's very short. So.
And contrast that with some of the cold opens, and I'm doing air quotes here, which you can't see because this is audio, in Star Trek Discovery, which can go on for, I don't know, 10 minutes or more before you ever even get to the title sequence, which, again, that's modern television, right? It's not just Discovery.
Yeah.
You know, you just go into shows, and eventually when there's a convenient moment to show you the opening credits, they'll throw them in there. So it's a different style of making TV these days. But anyway, that's just a little bit of trivia I thought I would throw in. So
yeah, that's great.
What are your final thoughts on this episode, and what is your rating for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a really interesting episode that leaves me somewhat frustrated, because I'm really enjoying all of the great character stuff that's happening in the episode. But the episode itself, because of the reasons mentioned earlier, just aren't my favorite, right? I just, the weird part about this episode is that I'm left almost thinking, like, what a kind of waste of an episode. Like, couldn't we have done this a totally different way? And like, you know, it just there's a part of me that feels like, okay, this is one of those episodes where, okay, we need 22 episodes, 24 episodes, whatever, how many we need. And that's what we're going to do in this episode. And yet the juxtaposition, though, of that is that there's so much important character work that's done in this episode. You can't feel like that. Mm-hmm. And so there's this real bifurcation for me of how I feel about the episode. And I think that the character work outshines the other part. So I'm going to give this 3.5 out of 5 zombie Vulcans, because I think that character work really shines. But the rest of it just kind of leaves me cold and dead like those Vulcans.
I was going to say, you sound like you're in the episode. Yeah. Matthew. you're cold and almost dead. Yeah. They could have done the story where T'Pol is exposed to the Trillium and it starts to have this impact on her that's going to change her over time.
Yeah.
And the crew's still in danger and they have to get out of somewhere, but without the zombie element, doesn't have to be a haunted house. Yep. I think they could have done that. I think the use of the zombies may be important for speaking to how humans, how Vulcans, just how people in general react, like how our minds work and how important having control of our thoughts and our thought processes is to our existence and to our being, and contrasting how the humans are reacting versus how the Vulcans are reacting, and also playing into the extreme emotions of Vulcans and how much they rely on being able to control that to actually exist, and that their civilization wasn't destroyed and that they can actually function and be productive today. They really rely on that ability. So having the Vulcan element in there, I think, is important for talking about that aspect of the mind. But it would have been nice, yes, if the story had more meat to it and it wasn't so much, you know... I personally, I don't like horror movies and I don't like scary stories in general. So, you know, this is not a story that I'm going to become attached to because I think that it's creatively well done.
Yes.
They could have found perhaps some better ways to put everything together. But there is a lot of heavy character development going on here that I think is very important for the show. And so I'm going to give this one 60 kilograms of Trillium.
Nice. See, okay. This also does feel like an episode where it could have easily been a bottle episode. And, you know, you have T'Pol being exposed to the Trillium, which then allows you, and you already have the storyline of the sense that they're trying to refine it, right? So let's have them refine it and start putting it on the ship, and it then causes her to kind of go nuts. You don't need to do a kind of zombie type thing, which I feel like I feel like it almost like we've kind of done this type of thing in Star Trek before, and so it almost would have just
we literally have. It's called Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah. So it just would have been interesting to then have explored the character moments and then have that. This, and again, I'm doing the thing where a podcaster rewrites an episode, but it's like, then it would have been nice maybe that the struggle for Archer is really about that human discussion of whether or not do I abandon this person for the mission, or do I hold on to what makes me human and say, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, so you can still really do the whole episode without having to have the horror zombie element to it. And yeah. I still think it would be just as interesting because you could make it a real psychologically horror thing for what's happening with right. DePaul without having yeah. to go to the actual horror stuff. So,
mm-hmm. When you said it could have been a bottle episode and then you started describing that, I thought you were going to say they could be processing the trillium and then T'Pol's job is to put the processed trillium into bottles.
No, oh, yes.
And in the process... Because it's she's getting it all over her hands.
Yeah, just everywhere. She's just breathing. Everywhere.
The, the dust is going up her nose. And
It's terrible. It's terrible.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Impulse as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And then you'll see a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form, choose to send to a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will come to Matthew and me right through that asteroid belt, and no zombies will be attached. And of course, you can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not analyzing Zindi star charts behind T'Pol's back, where can people find you?
Well, you know me so well. Huh? You can find me all over the place under the name MattRushing02 over on social media. You can also find me here on the network doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show. And we talk about all of those franchises out of this Star franchise that we love so much. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network talking Star Wars each and every week with John Mills on Aggressive Negotiations. And I've got a completed show called Owl Posts, talking about all things Harry Potter, every single chapter of the series, one chapter at a time. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just how much Trillium D is going to give you that real buzz, where can people find you?
Oh, yeah. That does take time. It takes a lot of experimentation, I'm not supposed to talk about because, when I'm not doing that, you can find me, as you mentioned, elsewhere on the network, talking Star Trek with you on all those other shows. You can also find me in the back catalog on many shows, and Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time as well. And I'd love to chat with you on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active right now, but you can find me on all the platforms, and I'd love to chat with you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. If you'd like to find out how to support the shows, how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, let's get our cocktail dresses ready because next time we're going to be exiled with Hoshi. And I hear it's going to be quite a party.
Well, Chris, I've only got one thing to say. Let's go.
Recording.
T'Pol's crazy pants.
Yeah. T'Pol's irrational, impulsive pants. Yeah.
T'Pol's paranoid pants.
Yeah. I could just see like a brand of jeans or pants called Impulse.
Impulse.
Yeah. Or it's a Vulcan perfume and cologne.
Oh, Impulse. Yes. Can't you just see the Vulcan perfume commercial?
Yeah.
Impulse. Highly logical.
Highly logical. You from VK.
Exactly.
From Vulcan Klein. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that for sure. All right, here we go. We start off the horror episode.
I know, okay. I know, which is a lot of laughter.